You don't get to be known as the most viral MMA team on the planet without good reason, and that's why I'm pretty sure you should be familiar with my guest today. He is a jiu-jitsu and judo black belt, and he's the head coach of the Goat Shed Academy. Please welcome to the show, Asim Zaidi. What's up, man?
What's up, man? I'm getting in my car right now, so there's no outside noise. One moment.
No worries, dude. I appreciate you jumping on with me. Thanks so much for coming on.
No, I was kind of happy because I think I'd never really spoken to the jiu-jitsu community too much, but I want to. I want to more. So, and I think that's primarily your audience, right? So.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and you're a jiu-jitsu and a judo black belt, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of reasons. I guess we'll talk about that in a second, but I never talked about my background before. You know, I just put out viral content of my team and stuff like that. But for the most part, all our competitors just think I just jumped on the scene and I came from nowhere. No, it's not too many people know about my background. So I just started telling people like where I come from, what my credentials are. But besides my students, not too many other people knew that because we were just going viral and I never spoke about, you know, my lineage or anything like that.
Well, and that's what I wanted to ask you about too, was like the going viral. It was just sort of out of nowhere. You guys were in my feed like constantly. And I'm looking at your videos and it's just tons and tons and tons of views and likes. And it was just like a real, just as like from a viewer standpoint, it was like an explosion. Like, what was that like when it's just like all of a sudden it's blowing up and you're in everybody's feed?
With Goat Shed, I knew I had a decent idea on how to market, just because I came from a family of entrepreneurs, and they were all extremely successful. Like, if you listen to my father and mother's success story and my uncle's, like, it's absurd. You're talking about like taxi drivers that have $50 million right now, you know? And I got to see that as a kid growing up where, you know, my mom's sleeping in her gas station. Now she owns, you know, a huge mansion by Miami, like, absurd, you know? And it's just like I got to see my family go from broke to absurdly successful. So I really learned a lot about marketing and entrepreneurship from my family. And I didn't think I was gonna be this good at it, not to boost myself up, but when we opened up, I just started making content, pretty creative stuff, and it was so easy because in the MMA industry, everyone's so generic. Honestly, everyone's just the same. You know, everyone bows, they're wearing the same thing, they're all wearing the same uniform, they have the same haircuts, they speak the same. And it's just like they blend into this crowd and they don't stand out. So it's really, really easy to get my students in the front line and expose them to the world, you know, super easy. Just if you look at my gym, based on the colors, you know what I mean? Like we got pink and baby blue as our colors, right? Teal and pink. I mean, there's no gym on the planet that has that, you know? So right away, I separated ourselves. And what's funny is, I think you're going to like this. The reason I chose those colors originally, so every gym is like red and black, blue and black, like just very basic stuff, right? I said, bro, how cool would it be to have trained killers just smashing people in pink?
Yeah, it would be
hilarious. Like, that's like the ultimate troll. And I'm like, all right, let's do this. And then I realized, you know, I'm born and raised in Miami. The Miami colors are pink and teal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, run it. You know, I was born and raised here. Miami culture is huge in my life. So we got the Lambos, we got the Rolls Royces, the McLarens, we got the jewelry and the mansions and the girls. We add the pink and teal, and then you got a gym that's never existed ever. You know?
Well, that's one of the things that I think people notice right away. Like, outside of the content itself and what is happening in the video, the setting is not something people have ever seen before. And it's not like any other gym before. And then you guys back it up. Like, you guys, your record right now is unbelievable. I saw you posted the other day about what the crazy record of your guys is. So it's not like you guys are going out there and getting dominated in pink and, you know,
exactly.
And teal.
Exactly, man. So, and that's great. You know, our team record right now is 80 wins, 8 losses. So we're 80-8. I'm not very happy about, some of the losses. I'm very disappointed. So it sounds like a great record, but it's still not satisfactory. I'm a little upset about it, but definitely, I mean, if you look at our win ratio, it's up there with like Khabib's team, you know, and we're not fighting at their level yet, but it just shows you, I have guys that are 20 years old that are 11-1 pros. You know what I mean? It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So by the time they get to that 28-year-old, 30-year-old fighter, we're going to be up there, and we're already on the same ratio as an unbelievable legendary team like Khabib's team. So it does make me feel good, you know? And like you said, we stand out a lot, you know, every video, just, we look completely different at the gym, along with the ridiculous content that I may put out, you know?
Well, some of the stuff I saw that was going viral, it's either two camps, people really like your stuff, or your stuff goes viral because people are complaining that you guys are sparring too hard and being reckless. Like, what do you say to people who think that you guys spar too hard and are being crazy?
And this is a problem. The thing is, the original jiu-jitsu culture has been lost. I got to first say that. Completely lost. So people don't know my background. So many times, especially jiu-jitsu gyms, you know, a lot of jiu-jitsu coaches will say, man, that's not what jiu-jitsu is about. That's wrong. That's this. Look, at the end of the day, I took more privates with Elio Gracie than most people in the world. You know, I was there with him every single day. I was his assistant when he was in the U.S. I was with him side by side. Hoyce Gracie, too, assisted him. Got my black belt from the Gracie Academy here. I mean, I understand jiu-jitsu not from six generations down. I understand jiu-jitsu from the source. You know, my lineage isn't like, this guy got a black belt here. No. I got it from the guys, the ones that started this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So the original jiu-jitsu culture, that's my gym. That's why all the Gracies love my gym. Henzo Gracie, Hoyce Gracie, they're always DMing me like, yo, what the heck? They're going crazy. That's how they grew up. That's how the Gracies grew up. Because Elio Gracie, one of the founders of jiu-jitsu, the way he was, he was constantly about proving jiu-jitsu, putting it on the line, being real. And the training environment was savage. It really was. It wasn't what you would think. It's called the gentle art. There's nothing gentle about how he trained at all. You know, so as far as jiu-jitsu culture, the gym that's holding the essence of jiu-jitsu, original jiu-jitsu, that's my gym, 100%. You know, so when I see like blue belts telling me that we're sparring too hard, I'm like, bro, you don't even know what you're doing. Like, what are you even saying to me right now? You know, and we're training professional fighters to fight at the highest level. So they need to feel that pressure. There needs to be a controlled chaos there to prepare them for the fight. You know, they can't just be doing light rolls and then go fight a guy that's trying to take their head off.
Right. And it's also, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys aren't in there every single day, dudes KO'd, but you can't post on Instagram about, you know, the flow rolls. You know, that doesn't get the views. You need the rounds that are, you guys are working hard and banging that people are gonna watch. And
so I'll tell you this: out of the 88 professional fights we have, right, we're 88. Out of the 88 professional fights, we may have pulled out due to injury, maybe three times, maybe not even, maybe two times. So we don't get hurt. I'll tell you this too. A lot of the really hard sparrings where we're hurting people, they're usually from other gyms. And it is what it is. Like, we love traveling for sparring. People travel for sparring to our gym. Once a week, we call it Who Want the Smoke. We have Who Want the Smoke sparring on Saturdays. Every gym is invited. Try to knock us out. We're going to try to knock you out. And that's what it is. So we do it once a week. Guys don't show up every week. So I would say, like, you know, once a month, you get a guy that comes in and we're going to spar hard, you know? But with each other on a daily basis, you're very right. They're not hurting each other. That's not what they're doing, you know? And it's hard to notice in the videos, but I promise you, they're never swinging at each other at 100% to the head, ever, 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 ever. Maybe body punches or leg kicks. Wrestling, we go hard, but punches to the head, I promise you, it's actually pretty good control, but people still freak out for whatever reason.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's one of those things where people who've never trained MMA, never fought professional MMA, they don't really know, A, what they're watching, or B, what's happening behind the scenes. You know, whenever I sparred, I always try to have the mindset of 50-ish percent to the head, harder to the body, legs, you can take whatever you want. And if you're going with someone and they're on, they're staggering and they're rocked, you don't follow up and KO your training partners.
Love it.
But all But all that people see is, oh, these guys are going really hard. This looks like a fight to me. This is wrong. They shouldn't do that. You know?
Yeah. You're very right. They're not understanding. Cause like what you said, honestly, they're really not hitting each other hard to the head. I won't allow that. Not definitely not to each other. You know what I mean? Like once in a while, like, you know, their tempers will flare, but I'll never let it go to where they can hurt each other. It's just not going to happen. I'm not irresponsible. I make a joke on my Instagram. I put a hashtag, where's the coach? I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yeah.
I do it all the time. Like somebody should stop. There's no supervision. Where's the coach? Yeah, yeah. But it's all a joke, man. I have a lot of control in the gym. I advertise this chaos, but in reality, everything is a controlled chaos in my gym. I promise. Like, I don't believe in having a perfectly structured class where guys are sparring in a certain way that they're used to, because the fight's not going to be that. So the sparring in the gym, I allow my students to surround the cage. I allow them to scream, corner, give advice, give bad advice. I allow them to troll, to make fun of the people sparring, because I want my fighters to ignore all that BS and listen to me. I need them to ignore all of the bullshit advice and hear my voice so they can practice that for the fight. Honestly, that's the method behind the madness. That's the truth. You know what I mean? So at first glance, it looks like craziness, but behind that, there's a lot to it. You know, there's a video that one of our most viral videos got millions and millions of views, where you probably saw it, where guy throws a chair at someone, a car crashes into the gym. You saw all of that?
Yeah.
But look, in the end of the day, those are our craziest moments over 2 years. Like, you know, I slapped a guy, I put it up there. But I wish I could go through each part of the video. There's logical stories to each one, I promise. Yeah. You know what I mean? So although it looks like everyone's like, yo, the coach is on juice. You know, he slaps people like they're half. I mean, yes, I am on juice, but I don't slap everybody, you know. Just to give you a basic example, they see me slap the guy and they're like, yo, this coach is out of control. Let me tell you what happened. I have 15 guys living in my gym. I feed them 3 meals a day, 5 days a week. Okay. I house fighters. I feed fighters. This is what I do. You know what I mean? A lot of them are immigrants. I had a guy that wanted to move to the gym. I never met him in my life. He didn't have a home to sleep in. I felt very bad for him. And I made the mistake of allowing him to stay in the gym without meeting him. So let him stay in the gym. He was a psychopath, starting fights with people. And then finally I kicked him out and he didn't want to leave. He's like, I'm not leaving. I live here now. I'm not leaving. Okay, so I had to slap him and throw him out. What else was I supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, you want me to call the police? Like, I don't want to arrest the guy. Like, I'd rather just slap him and kick him out of my gym. You know?
Yeah, right? Just handle myself.
I think it's a decent story. I mean, I think it's fair.
Yeah. That's fair. Now that you've had, like, this success and, you know, people know you guys and they know the school, outside of that Saturday sparring session, do you get people coming in trying to test themselves and
so What I do is I feel the vibe, okay? So we actually, like, for example, if any of your friends ever visited my gym, you know, you will leave with an amazing experience, I promise you. But I'll feel the vibe. Some guys want to come and throw down like that, like, and you know it off bat. So what I'll do normally is when a fighter comes in the gym or somebody comes in the gym and I see them training, I'll say, hey, look, I'll say this before the sparring. I'll make an announcement. Guys, Instagram is not real. It's a TV show. Do not spar my guys hard. We're all here. We're all cool. If you want to spar hard, come up to me, ask me. We'll go in the cage and we'll have good, fun, hard sparring. But have healthy sparring out here. I often call it play sparring.
Right.
Because I don't want them to be competitive. I'm just like, hey, guys, play spar. Instagram's not real. That's usually my speech. And then if they want to be competitive, okay, we go in the cage and we have a fair, hard sparring. No problem.
I want you to tell me a little bit about the reality show. But once you guys got connected and you were doing the reality show, did you notice a perception change? Because it's more of an in-depth look at you guys, not just small clips on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I guess my very long question is two parts. Can you tell me how the reality show came to be and how that's really affected you guys since it's been happening?
Super good question, actually. So one thing is, the owner of Combate Global, It's the largest Latin American organization in the world for MMA. They get about 800,000 to a million views a week. And they throw an event every single week of the year. In America, people don't know about it too much because it's a Latin American, primary Latin American audience. So just to give you a, for example, I mean, UFC is world famous, but they have a huge North American audience. One Championship has a huge Asian audience. I would say Latin America is Combate Global. That's the equivalent, you know? Now, the thing about them is the owner was a co-creator of the UFC. A lot of people don't know that. Right. He's the one that started UFC 1, okay? So the guy's really, really intelligent. So I told him my background. He was asking me like, yo, you're viral. You're all this stuff. Where'd you come from? So I told him my background. And when he realized who I learned from, where my black belts are from, all that stuff, he's like, dude, why don't you tell people about this? Because in reality, a lot of your competitors think you're just a dick because you just hit the scene. You're super, super loud, wearing your jewelry, you know, and then like you bring your fighters and you talk shit. They don't know, like, hey, this is coming from a culture, from the Gracie family, a confidence where you actually have a resume, you know, and you should tell people about that. So the reality show was his objective, to get people to understand Goat Shed a little more. And I thought it did a pretty good job. It's on VIX Plus, which the problem is it's not a famous app yet. It's a Latin American app. It's going to get bigger, but it's not there yet. So it's not making the impact that I was hoping for, because it doesn't I have more audience on my Instagram than VIX Plus. You know what I mean?
Right.
So if I post on my Instagram, I could probably do better than their viewership, in total respect to VIX Plus right now. They'll be bigger one day, but not right now. So it didn't do the publicity. Yeah, it's the beginning. So it didn't do the publicity that I wanted for it, but I'll say that it did give a really in-depth look, and it made me look inside of myself, not to get too deep, but look inside of
go deep if you want. Go as deep as you like. Yeah, I'm here for it.
I'm posting constantly the fun, superficial side of things. You know, like I'm posting constantly like, yo, we pulled up in a Rolls Royce and we have a $600,000 car in front of the gym and we have all this jewelry and there's a ring card girl during sparring, like just absurd things. Like we had midgets wrestling the other day in the gym. Like I do crazy shit, but I don't get to show the in-depth look like, hey, we have 15 guys living here. We have guys that sleep in their car outside the gym. They're all on meal plans sponsored by the gym. Like, it's a beautiful thing. That's insane. Not too many gyms can say they do that, that they house fighters and feed fighters and that they're following their dreams. And we sacrifice a lot for our fighters. Absurd. And I don't tell people about it because I feel like it takes away from the good deed. You know?
Right, right. You're not doing it for the publicity. You're doing it for the fighters.
Yeah, like I'm not showing that. I'm showing money. I'm showing flash. And it looks like my fighters are rich as shit. Nobody knows that they live in the gym. You know what I mean? Nobody knows that their gym bag is a garbage bag. You know, nobody knows that. And it's like, I never want to show that side of it. But after this reality show and I saw how much love we got because people got to see the truth, that I'm like, you know what? I'll keep this fun side, but let me go ahead and show people who we actually are also. And that's a big reason why I'm on this podcast right now, because I think it's time that people found out, yeah, we're having fun. We're making it a show, but what's behind this is something that's never been done to this level. Like, it's so special. You know, the amount of money I invest into my guys, all the promotion we do, all the marketing we do, essentially it goes back into feeding this team and allowing them to follow their dreams. You know, that's what it's for. So
when you have this staple of guys, most of them are young, right? Most of them are like early 20s guys.
Yeah. Yo, you know what's crazy, man? I wish you could meet some of these guys. They're so special. They're so young and they're so good. Like, they are absurdly good. I've been around the world to the best gyms in the world with the best coaches in the world. I'm telling you, I have a freaking gold mine in that gym. Like, a lot of people are like, yeah, but they're not in the UFC yet. Don't worry. The average UFC fighter is 32. My guy's 23 and he's already 11-1. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, don't worry. Like, our guys are killing it. Imagine this. My guy, I have a guy, he's actually 22. 22 years old, 11-1, professional, okay? This kid can retire for 6 years, come back and still make it to the UFC before the average age.
Right.
It's just
like,
the truth.
They're just so ahead of the curve. Like, dude. these guys have pro records younger than I was when I started training jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, yep. Do you think that's how it's going to be going forward? You're going to have to be someone who's been training jiu-jitsu and MMA super, super young, that's the only way to make it?
This thing's getting so complicated, man. MMA's complicated. And the worst is jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu's evolving at such a quick rate. If you don't keep up with it, dude, you're not a black belt anymore. If you got a black belt 20 years ago and you're not studying right now, dude, you're lost. You're lost, man. So, like, I got a black belt. I was 21. How long ago? I got a black belt like 12 years ago, right? So, I'm 32 now or 33. So, 12 years ago, I got my black belt. If I didn't continue studying the way I did, you know, flying to John Danaher, taking all my privates with John Danaher, living with Gary Tonin, hanging out with the whole death squad, having Ethan Krelliston come into my gym, buy all the freaking DVDs. If I didn't do that, my black belt would be obsolete. I would not be able to say I'm a black belt. The knowledge of jiu-jitsu has increased so quickly. I mean, there's freaking purple belts out there that know more than old school black belts. It's wild to me. Like, there's 16-year-olds that probably break my legs in half. You know?
Yeah, dude. You know what I mean? That's the worst thing. Is like, I'm watching ADCC and I'm seeing guys like Cole Bate and like these young dudes. And it's like, bro, I'm a grown man. I have no chance. If I run into this dude on a mat and it's like an open mat and we're rolling, my goal is just, all right, I'm going to get in his clothes guard and just stay still as long as I can so he doesn't destroy me. And they're like 16, 17 years old. You know, it's crazy how young the game is.
Dude, I was so sad. So, like, listen to this. You're going to love this. So I was a black belt from the Gracie Academy. I felt great. And then Hoist Gracie came up to me and he's like, look, for you to get to the next level, you need to go to a pro gym. Who's your favorite fighter? I said, hey, GSP is my favorite fighter. So he sent me to Try Style with Fraz Zahabi. Okay. Yeah. I get to Fraz and you have to understand, like, I thought I was like a god. Like, man, I represent the Gracie family. I'm beating everyone's ass. I've been doing bare knuckle, no time limit, no weight class fights since I was 14, representing the Gracies, like defending our name, challenge matches, like all this stuff. You know what I mean? So I thought I was a badass. I'm like, yo, no one can touch me. I get there. I spar with Faraz. This guy catches me in like 5 heel hooks in 5 minutes. And I'm just sitting there. I'm sitting there on the sidelines just flabbergasted. I've never used that word in my life, but I'll use it right now. I'm flabbergasted on the side like, what just happened to me? My world crumbled in front of me. Because, like, maybe I've been doing jiu-jitsu longer than Faraz. I'm not even sure. I don't know when he started. I've been doing it since I was 9 years old. But that guy destroyed me. His knowledge was way above mine. He completely outclassed me. And it humbled me a lot. And I got to learn so much from Faraz. He sent me to John Danner. I got to learn an absurd amount from John. John was just, like, changed my whole life. I am the great coach I am today, and my mind works the way it does because of John, Faraz, Hoist Gracie, Helio Gracie. These figures, they changed my whole life, man, and I'm so grateful for them. But like I was saying, you didn't keep up with your knowledge, you're an obsolete black belt. You have to be studying today. You just have to.
I know, obviously, you're an MMA school, you're an MMA academy, and that's what the focus is. How often are your guys doing pure jiu-jitsu and just straight grappling? Do you ever put a gi on? Do your guys ever put the gi on?
No. Don't go that far.
I didn't think so.
Don't go that far. Do me a favor. Oh, man. I should say. Do me a favor. When you're bored, go to YouTube, type in Goat Shed Burns Black Belt. And my opening of my gym, I burnt my gi and my black belt when I opened my gym the day I opened. I'm like, I'm never wearing this shit ever again in my life. I'm done. I'm done with the gi. I never want to touch that thing again, man. And so we never do gi. But as far as jiu-jitsu training, we roll all day long. It is MMA focused, though. Like, it's a lot of fence wrestling. It's a lot of, like, positions on the ground, like, that are more MMA positions. We start in crucifix, you know, like the crucifix. We start in crucifix. Yeah. We start rounds there. We start in the Dagestani handcuff.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, we start there. So it's, we grapple. My gym, if you don't have cauliflower ears, you will get cauliflower in 1 week at my gym. But I wouldn't necessarily say it's like pure jiu-jitsu, you know?
Right. You're focused on MMA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's jiu-jitsu for MMA, you know?
Dude, you know what you should do? I think this would be a great video. And as long as you tag me as giving me credit, you can have this idea for free.
Okay.
You got to walk into, like, the next time you guys have, like, a team practice or whatever, walk in and just show them, like, this is a gi. We're going to start doing gi jiu-jitsu and just, like, dude, get the reactions of these dudes.
Dude, like,
you know what I mean?
One thing I hate, and I did a joke to my students the other day, which is similar to what you're saying. So the warm-ups of jiu-jitsu, once you're a high-level fighter, I mean, bro, you don't need a shrimp anymore. Like, I'm sorry.
Right.
Like, if you've been shrimping for 15 years, it's not going to get better. Like, you're done with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't understand why it's still happening. But whatever.
Yeah.
So I hate the running around the mat, jumping jacks, burpees, shrimping, forward rolls. Like, once you're a certain level, you coordinated, it's just, for me, it's a waste of time. I rather just warm up by drilling technique. So that's what I do with my students. I just make them drill technique or flow roll to warm up, you know? So I use every minute of the class for technique training, skill training. Now, the other day, I try to line them up to make them shrimp. This is bad. My students are such rebels. Not one person listened to me. They all looked at me like I was an idiot. They all looked at me like, what? What are you telling us right now? Oh, okay.
All right, so maybe my prank idea wouldn't work too well then if they were just going to tell you to go F yourself.
Yeah, they're literally no respect. They're going to tell me to go F myself. Oh, my God.
Now, when you guys are doing, like, you're grappling and you have, like, an MMA-focused, you know, grappling, are you grappling with gloves on, or are you just doing, like, no-gi and you have the mindset of your...
No, so most of the time it's with gloves on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, so what I do is I ask everybody to put their small gloves on. Once in a while, you know, a guy won't have his gloves, he'll do it, you know, without his gloves. But for the most part, everyone has gloves on so they can mark their strikes, you know?
Well, I'm mainly asking because I'm 35 years old, and when I come down and hang out and do some no-gi rounds, I want to know whether your 20-year-old killer is going to be punching me in the face or if I can just roll for the legs and
save myself. I'm telling you, look, listen to me. I promise you. Look, I had Ethan. So, you know Ethan Carlson?
Yeah, yeah.
So, super,
I don't know him
super,
personally, but yeah.
Yeah, he's like a great friend of mine. Like, I was there when he first started jiu-jitsu. I was there before he started jiu-jitsu, when he was a striker. He was a kickboxer. Like, well, he was trying to be a kickboxer guy, you know?
Yeah.
And he got into jiu-jitsu. So I've known him for so many years. And he came to my gym. He sees all the crazy viral content. And I told him, yo, do some MMA sparring. And he's like, are you fucking crazy? No way I'm going in the cage. I'm not going in your cage. I see all your videos. I'm like, bro, those videos, don't worry about them. Get in the cage. I'm going to give you my best fighter. And you're going to have the time of your life. You know, and I put him in there with some of my best guys. And they had a blast, you know, and they're controlling their strikes and, you know, he's grappling with them and they're having a good time. And he got to use his jiu-jitsu in an MMA circumstance, you know, and it's beautiful. It works very, very, very well, you know, and he's very competent because he knows combat jiu-jitsu. So I'm sure that helps too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But super competent, did a phenomenal job. In fact, I try to convince him, like, yo, come on, let's do MMA. What are you doing, man? Let's do this.
There's more money in MMA, buddy. Let's go. Let's go. Let's make the money. Now, when you guys are training, are you running all aspects of the camp, or do you have a striking coach, a jiu-jitsu coach, a wrestling coach, and you're overseeing, or are you more hands-on in each department?
No, I'm very hands-on. So I'll tell you this. This is pretty cool, I guess. So my family all came from Taekwondo as well. My uncle, my mother, my father, they all competed. They're all black belts. So when I was 3 years old, my father, I have videos of him teaching me spinning back kicks when I was three, you know. And then I saw at 10 years old or 9 years old, I saw the UFC and I saw Hoist Gracie just murk all these guys. And I'm like, Dad, this Taekwondo stuff's bullshit. I don't want to do that. And he's like, no, that's fake. That's not real. UFC's fake. And I said, no, I'm done with Taekwondo. I want to do jiu-jitsu. And I started jiu-jitsu. But I've been striking my whole life. So technically, I mean, I've been striking for 30 years and I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 23 years. So, I mean, I do everything. And I've been doing judo, whatever, like 17 years. So, and I wrestle too. So I teach everything. I teach takedown, striking, grappling to my guys. I am the only coach for my team. And I've been the only coach for my team for 5 years. And I've opened up now. And for 2.5 years, it's only been me. But I have so many fighters. This team's grown so much. that it needs to, I need somebody. I need an assistant. I can't do this anymore by myself. I can't handle it. Like I'm working, I'm at my gym literally with no joke. I sleep, I don't know if you know this, if you watch my Instagram, but I sleep at my gym like 3-4 times a week. I live there too.
Yeah.
And if I'm not living there, I'm there from 8 a.m. till 9:30 p.m. and I don't leave the door. So I'm there 13 hours and I don't leave the door. You know what I mean? So I mean, it's my life, but it's now taking too much. Like I'm exhausted and it's hard to organize everyone's camp. Too many fights, yeah. Too many camps. So I need to get an assistant. I had some awesome coaches reach out. I'm not sure if you know who Neil Melanson is.
I've heard the name, but I'll be honest, I'm not too familiar.
Yeah, so they call him the Godfather of Filth. He's an awesome guy. Not to be too vulgar, but he had a viral video on BJJ Fanatics talking about controlling a man by his asshole. Did you ever see that?
Okay.
So he's a phenomenal coach. He was Randy Couture's coach. Phenomenal coach. And he was one of my coaches growing up. So he offered to, you know, co-coach the team with me. I just got to be able to fly him in and take care of him the way he needs. But I'm trying to work that out. And hopefully I'll have somebody coaching with me very soon.
Yeah, it's got to be tough managing such a big stable of guys who are successful. So you can't really phone it in because they're all fighting good dudes and with big records. But, you know, really, if you want, you know, I'll come help you coach the jiu-jitsu. Just fly me down like once a weekend, like once a month. I'll come down for a weekend and we'll get some rolls in, you know, you let me know.
You'll have a blast in Miami for sure. You know, but yeah, I mean, I definitely need help in that department juggling all of this because it's not only that. So I hate to boast about myself, but since I am very good at marketing, a lot of people don't know this. I run my Instagram and social media myself. I edit all my videos myself. I create all the content myself. I film the videos myself. So essentially, you know, I'm coaching whatever, like 20 pros, 15 amateurs. They all fight 5 times a year. I have to run all their camps. I have to handle memberships for the gym. I have to market. I have to do all social media, create the content and edit. I have like 8 jobs. And then the worst part is, you know, my fiance, she's an attorney. And she quit her, you know, amazing job at a law firm to become the manager of all the fighters. So we opened up our own management team and she manages and is the attorney. Yep. She's the attorney for all my fighters and she helps book the fights and negotiate contracts. She's a phenomenal attorney. So we're really lucky to have her. Now she has 7 jobs on top of it and promotions. They want to talk to me because I'm sort of like the influencer face of the gym.
Yeah, and you're the guy, like, you're the face. Yeah,
exactly. I'm the face. So they're constantly trying to talk to me about, you know, everything and juggling the business and coaching is hard, man. It's really hard because I have extra jobs that other coaches don't have. You know, no coach out there is editing their own Instagram videos and making it go viral. Right. And then nobody's doing that, man. It's hard. It's not easy. You know?
Yeah, I was before we jumped on, like I have a bigger following on like my personal page, not the show page. And I try to post, you know, 2-3 times a day, just like pure jiu-jitsu stuff. To post a 10-second Instagram reel, it's like might be 20 minutes worth of work because you got to shift camera focus and crop and like, dude, people think that you film your roll, you throw it on Instagram and there it goes. But this is going to sound super pretentious, but like, the post-production on an Instagram reel is more than what people think it is. So trying to do all of that plus everything else you're doing, man, I'm amazed you don't have somebody already teaching jiu-jitsu, teaching Muay Thai, teaching wrestling.
One thing that's difficult too. So first of all, having all these jobs, I had a full head of hair last year. I went bald in 1 year. You know? The hair on my beard is going to fall out too, but you know, the hard part about finding the right coach. So there's a lot of people that offer to coach at my gym, a lot of people. And there are some assistants that help with pad work and stuff. And they're really great. The problem is it's hard to find a Muay Thai guy that understands wrestling. It's hard to find a jiu-jitsu guy that understands striking. It's hard to find a wrestler that understands, you know, jiu-jitsu. It's just nobody. It's very hard finding a complete coach. You know, it's really, really, really difficult. So, I mean, essentially, how can I rely on a certain guy that only understands one discipline to coach my fighters. Because, like, I can easily find coaches in each discipline, but what I need is an assistant that can watch their whole training as a whole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can say, yo, this guy needs to work this, this, and this. Make sure he gets it. But the coach is going to have to know how to grapple, how to strike, how to do all these things. So that's why it's hard to find that guy. It's very hard.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. With the exception, you need someone who can understand the blend of striking and grappling. And a pure Muay Thai coach is going to teach you pure Muay Thai. And unless they have grappling experience, you're gonna have completely wrong stances and approaches and techniques that it just doesn't work for what your guys are trying to do.
And you look at look at the greatest minds in MMA. Like, you look at Faraz Zahabi, for me, he's one of the greatest. Greg Jackson, all these guys understand the complete game, striking, grappling, everything. Whereas you go to some gyms out there and, you know, I won't name call today. I'll be nicer because we're talking to a jiu-jitsu girl. But there's one gym in particular. They're a super gym here in Florida. But in reality, there's one coach that knows how to strike. He doesn't know shit about grappling. He can't throw up a triangle for his life. Then you got a wrestling coach who can't throw a good jab for his life. So what the hell are you teaching right now? How are you even coaching MMA? Together, they're sort of a complete fighter. Maybe not really, because the wrestler doesn't know how to do jiu-jitsu either. So they're almost a complete fighter. But in reality, like, they don't understand MMA. They can't. It's impossible.
Yeah.
They don't have the knowledge. You know what I mean? So it's hard to find that coach. And they're out there, but they're rare. They're usually the top of the sport, you know, to find that guy.
Yeah. It's hard to find someone like that. But fortunately, you've grown into what you've grown. So you have a lot more to appeal to people than it's like some shitty hole in the wall MMA gym's trying to make it. Like, fortunately, you do have.
That's why, like, right now, I feel like since we hit the scene so fast and we skipped line, a lot of our competitors hate on us, you know, and they're upset. They're like, I swear, this is a fact. You're going to be shocked at this. Do you know what the average MMA fighter makes for their debut?
So I fought pro MMA in Pennsylvania. I'm in Central Jersey now. I was in Pennsylvania. I think I made $500 to show and $500 to win in my first fight.
That's fair. That's what fighters make on their debut. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, you're going to be shocked right now. How much would you expect a Goatshed fighter to make on his debut?
Oh, you're trapping me now, because I'm going to feel really bad about myself for making $1,000 for my first MMA fight.
Don't feel bad. No, because that's the average pay. It's 500, 500.
Yeah.
Now, and I market hardcore. And a lot of people are like, why does he do that? He doesn't have to do that. That's not the way to do it. I'm about to tell you how much my debut makes, but what do you think?
I'm thinking, just based on what the average is and what I see from you from marketing, I'm going to guess 2K and 2K.
Okay. Really awesome. My last debut fight that I had for my student made 5K.
Damn, dude. That's fucking crazy. And now I do feel bad about myself, because that's 10 times what I made just to show up.
Now, I don't want to call out this organization. I'll say this. It's one of the biggest organizations in UFC Fight Pass. They offered my fighter $750 to fight a 5-round fight title fight. When I told him the numbers we're making for a title fight, he was like, the owner called me. The matchmaker didn't call me. The owner called me and was like, you're lying. And I showed him the contract and he was mind blown. Absolutely mind blown. The thing is, like, there is money in this sport, but what's great for me is nobody knows how to make it. Like, it's amazing.
Right.
Like, the ones that know how to make it, Sean O'Malley, Conor McGregor, Patty, me, we're the ones that know how to make money in this sport. And a lot of people look at us and may criticize us, but when I have a homeless fighter making 5K for a debut and this guy's making $500, now it starts to make sense. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And that's the thing, too, is, like, I always say, if you're trying to make it as a fighter, you're basically living intentionally poor. You can't work a full-time job and be a professional fighter, but the organization is paying you $500 and $500. And that's if you stay healthy to get to the fight and your opponent stays healthy and you both make weight and nothing crazy happens, you get $1,000 at best if you win. So if you can do it that way, dude, your guys have a big advantage over everybody else.
And then that's why. So another criticizing thing that our competitors talk about is like, oh, why doesn't he have guys in the UFC? So I have one fighter in the UFC, But he's like, why aren't all those guys in the UFC? Because I have a lot of guys that are, you know, 11-1, 8-1, 7-1, 7-0. Like, these are good records. I'm not putting them in the UFC because, like I told you, the average age of the UFC fighter is 32. My guy, if he's 24 years old, 23 years old, making this kind of money, why am I going to do that? If my guy who's 22 years old is making almost 30K a fight outside the UFC, why would I put him in now? He's not mature yet. He needs to grow. Yeah. He needs to get experience because he's going to be going against full-grown men that have been in this sport grinding. Like, bro, let me build this kid up a little bit. You know, let him grow into his body. Yeah. And I'll get him there. I'll get him there. But we're good here for now. You know, like, everything is about timing. Everything is about timing. And people don't get that. Like, Mayweather fought Pacquiao at the right time and beat him. So, look, can one of my fighters beat a guy like Oliveira, right now? No. But can he beat him in 5 years? Yeah, I bet you.
Right.
I bet you. I bet you my 23-year-old in 5 years will destroy him. But right now, no, of course not. I'm not stupid, though. You know, everything is about timing. My students have unlimited potential, but I need to choose the right time to test them, where to test them, where to put them. That's just what life is. Look, Khabib didn't go to UFC until he was 17-0.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's insane.
People forget that. People forget he was 17-0 when he came in. He was not coming in at like 2-0, 3-0. Like, he had the experience.
And what's absurd, which is, this is too much, in his like 15th fight, he fought a guy that was 0-0.
Yeah.
But I'm not criticizing him. Bro, his father is a genius. His father created the greatest stable of fighters probably in MMA history. Okay? He's a genius guy. That's why they always call it father's plan. Khabib is my favorite fighter ever. And I have to say, they're very smart because experience is huge. You have to build up your fighter. You have to build them up properly. You have to let them grow. You have to let them mature because fighters are very immature. Look, I've had a fighter recently who just lost a very close decision, like split decision, very, very close, right? He had 8 fights. The opponent had like 27, okay? My student had 7 fights and the opponent had like 27. So he had over 3 times the amount of fights. Now, I threw him in there, no problem, because I'm confident in my guy, but he lost a very close split decision and I know he's better than that guy. I know he is. I promise you, like, my guy is better, but my guy is also much younger. He has 1/3 of the fights. So, in my opinion, give my guy 2 years and he'll finish that opponent. But I timed it wrong, you know? Right. I got too excited. I was like, nah, fuck it. Let's do it. Let's smash this guy. And I was wrong. Like, maybe my guy wasn't mature to that degree yet. And the guy did a very good job stalling the fight. And my guy didn't pressure enough. And we lost a very close decision. So, but that just gives you an example of maturity and immaturity. You know, that's all.
For sure. You have a stable of guys. You have a lot of guys in the school right now. Who's fighting soon and what do you guys as a team have in the works and coming up?
So I'll tell you this. This is the biggest thing ever. And this is awesome if you can tell your followers this is big. So Hoyce Gracie, I'm going to throw a giant celebration party at my house. We call it Goat Mansion. We have like a giant, it's like a 20,000 square foot home. So it's huge. We're going to put mats. We're going to put a cage. We're going to have a stage. We're going to do a mini seminar. I'm going to have food, entertainment for everyone at Goat Mansion. Everyone's invited. It's a $100 donation for the seminar. It includes food, entertainment, and the seminar. I'm inviting everyone to come through. I think it's going to be a great time. I'm bringing legends of the sport out there. Like, Randy Couture's coach is coming. Amanda Nunez, Tyron Woodley's coach is coming. We got Ayman Zahabi, which is Faraz's brother. We got Neil Melanson. We got a lot of big names. Dean Thomas. We got a lot of big names. They're all coming. Great networking stuff. And we're just going to have a good time, man. And should be really motivational. Should be great content and a lot of knowledge out there. Hoyce is going to, we call it tea time with Hoyce. We're going to have story time with Hoyce. He's going to tell us about, you know, how he grew up. And that's the biggest thing for the team right now. I want to throw that celebration for everybody, you know?
And when's that going to be?
That's going to be December 18th. I just posted like 10 minutes ago, the flyer. Tea with Hoyce. I mean, check it out. Everyone's invited. I mean, I can recommend if they need a hotel, if they're flying in, There's a very cheap hotel very close to my house. It'll be a sick time. Like, I throw good parties. Like, I'm thinking about having, like, little midgets with hors d'oeuvres walking around, like, maybe mini slider burgers, you know, and, like, cocktail. I don't know. Like, I'm going to make this. It's going to be super fun, super funny, and we're going to have a good time, you know?
If people aren't already following you or they want to get more information about this, where should they be going to follow you?
Okay. My personal is fun, but forget that. At GoatShed. That Instagram, at GoatShed, that is everyone's secret evil little time that they do on the side. Whether they follow or not, I know they're watching. Our content is absurd. You watch my top three posts on my pinned list, you're going to follow. It's hilarious. Like, our stuff is so cool. Everyone's going to love it. Follow at GoatShed.
Perfect. I'll put links to your Instagram down below. I'm going to link to your personal one too, because I still think your personal one is pretty good. And I appreciate you coming on and hanging out with me for a while and just chatting. I had a lot of fun.
If you can come December 18th, come on, do it.
Well, I'm gonna hang up with you and I'm going to text my wife and see if we can at least send just me. Maybe okay. I'll bring the whole family if they want to come, but maybe I can just send myself.
Okay, it would be awesome.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Okay, pleasure speaking to you.
Huge thank you to Awesome Zadie for joining me today. I linked to everything we talked about down in the description, so please check all of that out. There is a lot of content coming, so please stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you all next time.